expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. I'm Michael Shaw and I'm glad to be back. I've been gone for a few weeks and boy, did we have some good shows. 2 weeks ago, Susan McLaughlin did 2 hours on the Sierra Conservancy. And what we've seen here in Santa Cruz is coming in full swing up to the Sierras. In fact, I was up there for about 10 days here this month, and evidence of it was everywhere. Incline Village, the southern section, is a 550-acre parcel, the Ponderosa Ranch, where the famous TV show was filmed. And that family is now squeezed. They're unable to develop that property. And so the federal government is coming in with $300 million to buy that property and turn it into a transit center. That's right, a transit center. It looks like they want to close the North Shore Road on Tahoe and make access to that part of the lake very difficult. So there goes our tax money in order to further impede our mobility, which, of course, is a constant theme we've been showing here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, how, amongst other things, our mobility is being restricted as the Sustainable Development Program, its Wildlands Project and its smart growth elements begins to squeeze the action of one group and then another group until ultimately all of us become subjected to a centralized control. And that's being sold to us in this fuzzy and warm language called sustainable development or smart growth. And our job here is to inform people locally and around the country of what this attack on American values is all about, where it comes from, and how it's implemented. Well, tonight I'm here with my co-host, Lisa Rudnick, who did last week's outstanding show with Rick Frost in the first hour. We learned how the ESA and other federal management policies are causing a massive accumulation of fire fuel in our forests. And, of course, that fire fuel is what has led to the kinds of catastrophic fire circumstances that we've seen in Southern California and throughout the West here over the last few years. And as long as a radical movement implementing the wildlands policy is in control of our federal, state, and local governments, this process is going to continue. But our hope here is that as the word begins to spread, not through major media, but through radio and Internet outlets such as this radio show and our website, which is freedom21santacruz.net, and our online publication, the Advanced Bulletin.net, begins to spread the word around the country. Everybody finds they're in the same boat, because the same dynamics that are happening here are happening in your community as well. So tonight we've got a very special show lined up. Our first hour is going to be with Mr. Kent Snyder. Now, Kent is the executive director of the Liberty Committee, and the Liberty Committee is works closely with the Congressional Liberty Caucus in Washington, D.C., a group of 24 congressmen who are committed to the principles upon which this country was founded, the ideals of individual liberty, private property, and a government that is limited in the scope of the exercise of its power. And as we come back here shortly, we're going to introduce you to Kent Snyder, a man who I've seen in various forums around the country. He may not know that I have, but I have. And the work that they're doing at the Liberty Committee is the work that America needs in order to recapture its glory as it propels itself into a new height here in the 21st century. And we'll be right back here at the Radio Liberty Network for the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show.
some of our affiliate stations take a commercial break, let me take a few moments to tell the rest of you a bit about Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a freedom policy center that celebrates the principles of self-governance and individual liberty which inspired the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America. It's a group of individuals who advance the freedom of all by promoting and strengthening the practice of constitutional administration in local, state, and national government. The Freedom 21 Santa Cruz mission is to advance the principles of freedom to individuals, community, and government through public discourse, community outreach, and grassroots education programs. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. Objectives of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz and its participants include the following. Focus public attention on the value of the freedoms guaranteed to Americans by the Constitution of the United States of America, and encourage individual and community interest in protecting those freedoms. Provide opportunities for political discourse among organization membership and the community. Promote and strengthen government responsiveness to the principles of freedom. Educate the public about local, national, and international threats to individual freedom and the U.S. Constitutional Republic. Invite Americans to unite against the advance of international collectivist movements that cause poverty, oppression, and a degraded earth. And to create a model for successfully promoting and ensuring U.S. constitutional government in a local community. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. I'm Michael Shaw, and I'm here with Kent Snyder. Hello, Kent.
Good evening. How are you?
Well, we're fine. It's still light here in on the central coast of California, but I'm sure it's dark and late back there in Washington, D.C., and I want to thank you very much for extending your day to share word with us out here in the hinterlands about what's going on in Washington, D.C.
Glad to be with you. Unfortunately, it's usually dark in D.C., even though it's during the daytime, but that's the way things go on here.
I understand. It seems that the moles are working very hard to undermine the liberties of the average citizen of America.
Yes, they are.
You know, the San Francisco Chronicle this morning reported in its headlines that Americans are not pleased. They say that that the voters are edgy and that they're not pleased with the direction that America is headed. Would you say that perhaps Congress has a role in that gut feeling that seems to exist out there across the land?
Oh, I think so. I think Americans are uneasy probably for a variety of different reasons. But one of them is probably the war in Iraq. That would make, even if a war was going well, that would make any thinking person uneasy. That's not a comfortable thing to have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, especially if you have family directly involved in the war. A lot of people are uneasy about the soaring debt. I mean, we're going to reach over $7 trillion, and that makes people uneasy. They're looking at the solvency of the Medicare Social Security system. They realize that's around the corner in terms of having to face off with that. And, of course, the terrorism, I mean, they're expecting, you know, people that I talk to, especially here in D.C., you know, we're expecting the next attack sometime. We know that's going to happen sometime. It's just a matter of when. So there's lots of reasons for people to be uneasy, and I think that a lot of those reasons have to do from or as a result of bad policies that come from Washington.
And if you were to summarize the nature of those bad policies, is that something you would be able to do, to give an overview of what it is that, from a policy perspective, has left America uneasy?
Well, I think you really kind of hinted at it in your opening remarks, and that is that people in Washington are always looking to centralize their power. And there is always this move, constant move, from a variety of different places for a very few people to have to come up with supposedly the answers. And the rest of us have to abide by that. And we reject that. I mean, we totally reject the idea that centralized planning and concentrated power is good. It's certainly anathema to freedom. It's anathema to the rights of the individual states and individual citizens of those states to make rules and laws that they want to live by and that sort of thing. So generally speaking, in my opinion, it's this constant drive towards centralized power that really, in my view, is an overarching theme that that causes so much of this these problems.
Much of the audience is familiar with Ron Paul. Not everyone in the audience, of course, would be. But Mr. Paul, of course, is a congressman who has dedicated his political life. He is a doctor as well, but his political life to the ideals that that we're going to be talking about here tonight, and that we talk about each week at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. Would you say that Congress, that there is a growing contingent within Congress that is receptive to the ideas and ideals that protect liberty?
Yes, there is, and I think it's embodied by Dr. Paul's Liberty Caucus, which you mentioned in your opening remark. And how I would explain that is that when we first started 5 years ago, Dr. Paul, as he's often recited or referenced in D.C. in the press as Dr. No, because he usually will be the lone no vote on a variety of bills. But Dr. Paul used to be, in fact, the lone no vote. But what you'll find is on some of these very important bills, when there might be 15 or 20 Republicans who vote no, that the majority of those 15 or 20 come from Dr. Paul's caucus. And so there is a move there for those individuals to come together and to say, well, Dr. Paul has done it. I've always wanted to do it. Now I've got courage and I realize that I can do it, and let's stick together. And, of course, probably the best example of that was during the Medicare vote, where a 15-minute vote turned into 3 hours, and for 3 hours, Dr. Paul's group was instrumental in stopping that. And that was really monumental. And so there's a variety of other smaller votes whereby these people are coming together and saying no to some of this nastiness.
Do you think that's reflective of perhaps the beginnings of an awakening across the country and with the voter that, you know, America is off track, and the essence of its being off track is the fact that we're not being true to the ideals that our forefathers fought for, and that centuries of Western civilization worked so hard to develop, and that culminated, of course, in the founding of this country, and a vision that was set out that would give to each human being recognition by the governmental entity that the rights that they own, that they have, are inherent to them and can't be taken away and need to be respected by the governmental process. Is there any sense you have that, despite the fact that our educational system seems to be amok, and we've had shows on that precise subject here, but that underneath all of that gray and cloudy sky is some refreshing renewal?
Well, yeah, and let me give credit where I think credit is deserved, and that is to people who are listening to this program, citizens from around the country that have become active, that have voiced their displeasure with their senators, with their representative, that are patient, that are persistent, that are aware of what's going on. I give those people credit, number one, because I will tell you that in my experience of watching and observing and listening and talking with members of Congress, they understand that, they respond to it. I wish more of them were as moral and principled as Dr. Paul is, but unfortunately 99% of them are not, in my opinion. So the credit really goes to the average American who is participating and realizing that politics does affect them and that they have to be involved in the process or they're going to be run over. So that's what I am most encouraged by, is the activism of people who believe in principles as you just described and are in there swinging the bat and saying, look, this is my country, this is what I believe in, this is what the country was founded upon, this is America, and that we need to fight to embrace those values and principles.
Well, certainly here in Santa Cruz, you know, we've been subjected to wacky politics that most
right.
of us gave up to just that, wackiness. And as time has moved along, we've learned they're not wacky at all. These people understand strategic management and principles of manipulation and indoctrination, and they've been very effective at it for a long period of time. And now they are pulling the trigger on what we've identified as the sustainable development movement. And the land use moves, both in our redwood forests as well as along our dilapidated rail line, evidence the commitment to these policies, which will control private property, the educational process, how we live, where we live, how much resources we utilize, how we move ourselves in our community, and so much more. And this isn't the meanderings of a few activist political types. It is a very organized and effective movement that here is beginning to show itself in all of its ugly colors. And so there are a lot of us here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz movement that participate without any reward. We understand that what we're fighting for is the future.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I characterize the people that travel to Washington, D.C. in particular as basically two kinds. And that is, one is the tourists who come here and look at the memorials in the city and those sorts of things. The other ones are the lobbyists and the special interest, whether that's from environmental organizations like the Sierra Club or the pharmaceutical industry or whatever it is. I mean, it's countless. And if you go out to the airport and you look at the tarmac, and there's always a fairly large number of private jets that are there, they spend money, on lobbyists, travel expenses and dinners and all sorts of things and entertainment and parties and whatnot, because they're here and they spend that money because they want something for it. It's an investment, it's an expense, and they expect to get a return on that money regardless of their particular issue. They're here for something, and that's what they work for.
Well, isn't this the natural consequence of democracy?
Well, it is. If you don't have any sort of established rules and you ignore the Constitution and you don't have any morals or principles embodied and codified by the Constitution, that is true.
Well, it seems to me that the power of the factions in this country have come to be exactly what George Washington warned, and that is that when the factions take over, the republic and liberty becomes lost. And that's why it's so important to have people like yourself and Congressman Paul holding the fort back there until the troops out here at the local level get themselves sufficiently organized that we can clean out a Congress that has gotten old beyond its time. And with that, we are going to have to break away here for a couple of minutes to let some of our affiliate stations promote some advertisements. And we'll look forward to being right back with our very special guest, Mr. Kent Snyder of the Liberty Committee in Washington, D.C.
You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic.
To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
In just over a month from now, Lisa, my co-host tonight, and I will join a number of other people at the National Freedom 21 Conference in Reno, Nevada. It will be an exciting time and a wonderful educational experience, and we hope that you, the listener, can join. You can check out the Freedom 21 Conference by logging into freedom21.org and going to the conference materials. But we're particularly excited here in Santa Cruz we've been asked to play a significant role in the conference by spearheading the development of a plan to advance freedom. The document that we are working on with people across the country will create a framework which will help any organization that you're associated with to organize and advance freedom in your own community. So, check that out at the freedom21.org website. And Lisa, who are going to be some of the people who are going to be speaking at this conference?
Well, I understand that our special guest this evening, Kent Snyder, will be there along with Congressman Ron Paul. We'll also have Judge Roy Moore, who was the Chief Justice of Alabama Supreme Court and was relieved of his duties when he had the monument containing the Ten Commandments on display. So he'll be one of our special guests, as well as Dr. Michael Kaufman, who developed the maps that show the Wildlands Project. Henry Lamb is not to be missed. He is an excellent speaker and an excellent patriot. He founded the national organization Freedom 21.
You know, Henry is, when the history books get written after the restoration of freedom in America, you know, there's going to be a big chapter on Henry Lamb.
Yes, and he is something else. He's a powerhouse of energy. So it's not to be missed. It is, as Michael said, just over a month from now, July 21st through 24th, up in Reno, Nevada at the Nugget Hotel, John Esquaga's Nugget Hotel.
And information will be dispersed there that would help you from whatever community you're in America. Of course, you're facing the same things we're facing here in Santa Cruz. It may not be as fully developed, but it is happening. And what we'll be delivering is a guide for public officials that you can take home and distribute back to within your community. And also, what will be promoted at the conference is a very intense video called America's Choice, Sustainable Development or Liberty. And there'll be quite a number of speakers engaged in that. Well, welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. I'm Michael Shaw here with our special guest, Mr. Kent Snyder from the Liberty Committee, the Liberty Congressional Congress and Caucus in Washington, D.C. And we're talking about the state of affairs in D.C., and a little mention was made of the kind of profligate spending that's going on in D.C., and in our second hour tonight, we're going to talk about how that profligate spending is showing its very unattractive face here in Santa Cruz. But for now, let's talk about how D.C. is funding some of this misguided adventures into collectivist action. And one of the things that I noticed on your website, Kent, is the concept of a zero down for the American dream. That sounds nice.
Sure.
What's that all about?
Well, unfortunately, the Congress has decided to make home ownership easier, which sounds nice, but is at the expense of the taxpayers. And so they're basically doing a two-pronged approach. The first approach was introduced by Kathleen Harris, the new freshman rep from Florida, who used to be the Secretary of State during the Bush-Gore vote the controversy down there. And she had the American Dream Down Payment Act, which basically gave people low-interest loans or interest rate on down payment. Now you're going to have, in the next week or so, the Down Payment Act, which basically says that people of certain incomes and qualifications will be able to get a home loan with no down payment. And, of course, this is all at the expense of the U.S. taxpayer. And I somewhat jokingly say that the third part of this scheme, which I haven't seen, so it's just a speculation on my part, but it certainly makes sense, that all of a sudden somebody will introduce a bill that says, well, we've covered your down payment for you. Why don't we go ahead and cover your monthly payment for you?
Well,
so that sounds absurd, but you know, that's I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. So, again, all of this is under wonderful-sounding names and goals and all that sort of thing, but once again, the American taxpayer is stuck with the bill, whether the present or future taxpayers and the members of Congress go back to their districts and around the country and act like they've really done something wonderful.
Well, Kent, let me throw some information uphill. You know, it's always great for us to hear what's going on in D.C. and the dynamic behind it. But when it hits the local level, particularly when it's what we are able to identify as sustainable development policy, it suddenly explodes like a missile hitting the ground. And let me tell you how it is that the housing policy here in Santa Cruz will be taking advantage of this zero down payment dynamic. Just yesterday, the Board of Supervisors passed what was called an Emergency Zoning Act to solve the intractable housing price problem here on the Central Coast. And what they did is they took a number of parcels and they gave the planning director czar-like powers to rearrange all zoning and all planning development rules in order to create subsidized government housing. At least 40% of any project is to be government controlled, where the government chooses the buyers. The government then protects the developer from any construction defect, according to this legislation. It waives the rules of notice to the neighbors. It waives the rules of planning process for these hand-chosen, selected developers for projects along the railroad tracks. What we're talking about are government tenements. Now, in essence, the financing has already been disclosed that for the first 3,700 of these units along the beach line of Santa Cruz County is $300 million coming from the federal government to subsidize the construction. Now, we all know that the nonprofits that will be building these actually have cost twice the amount of a free enterprise builder. But what happens is the developer who goes along with the program is guaranteed the profits with these taxpayer-guaranteed subsidies of $300 million for 3,700 small units along the railroad track. Then in addition, the rents will be subsidized, and now you're telling us that Washington, D.C. is giving authority for the down payments to be subsidized. So all you got to do is be a willing, compliant buyer, someone who is going to pay allegiance to this new government regime of housing authority, and our Congress is making it all very, very easy. And with that, we'll be taking a very short break here, and back with our special guest, Mr. Kent Snyder, as we discuss the policies in Washington, D.C., and their effect on local communities here on the Santa Cruz Radio Show on the Radio Liberty Network. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. I'm here with Kent Snyder, and we're talking about policies in Washington, D.C. that have their effects on all of us across America, a government that is spending money like a drunken sailor, whether it be on war or on land acquisition or on other kinds of boondoggling government expenditures that always have some strings attached. In the last segment, summarized how that kind of policy is going to affect us here on the ground. It kind of gives the local collectivist a full circle on what it is they want to do to gain a populace that is increasingly dependent upon them for their health, for their housing, for their jobs, and for the rest of the control elements that we see coming in so many ways.
Oh, sure. I mean, if it's like the example that you just mentioned in Santa Cruz or up at Lake Tahoe or here in Arlington County, which is just outside of D.C. where I live, with the so-called affordable housing movement, or wherever, it doesn't make any difference, or wherever it is, these organizations will go to these localities. They will use the heavy hand of government at the county, at the city level, possibly at the state level. And when they have all the rules in place, they've got all the participants in place, and everyone says thumbs up for this so-called affordable housing project or smart growth project or something, whatever they want to call it, then they pause and they say, well, we need the money. And, of course, as you know, cities and counties can sometimes are hesitant about issuing bond issues, and the state governments, especially in California, don't have much cash reserves, if any, and they can't print money, and they have a hard time sometimes borrowing money. So now these organizations just bypass all that work and realize that it's a waste of time, and they fly to D.C. and they petition their congressman and say, well, why can't you give us an earmark of $5 million or $300 million, as you mentioned, or $1 billion or whatever it is on an appropriations bill, sneak that into a, you know, 500 or 600 or 800 or 900 page document, and we've got our money.
Well, you know, common sense causes us all to realize that that can't go on forever. Have you contemplated the consequence of this ongoing circumstance?
Well, common sense, as you mentioned, does state that, as my dad often says, there's only 100 pennies to a dollar. And he says that to me all the time because he gets disgusted about this runaway spending. But there really aren't very many options. I mean, I guess the worst option possibly is some sort of financial calamity. I mean, the U.S. Government is going to be $7 trillion in debt.
We're back at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show after some of our stations broke away, and we're with Kent Snyder, and I apologize for the suddenness of that interlope on you.
That's all right.
But we're talking about how it is that government spending going on indefinitely in a profligate way is going to lead to something that we'll all regret.
Well, sure. I mean, sooner or later, the bills have to be paid. And unfortunately, I'm getting the sense myself by just listening and talking with people and also by seeing some surveys that pop up from time to time that the American public, by and large, is beginning to believe that debts and deficits don't matter. They actually believe that it is simply a fine-tuning process of the Federal Reserve, in particular, of monetary policy and fiscal policy by the U.S. Congress. So they don't. They think that somehow, by some sort of science or art or creative or inventive thinking, that we have gone beyond the truth that deficits and debts do matter. Well, the fact is, as you know, that people want to get paid back their money, whether it's foreign governments who are buying U.S. treasuries, if it's foreign governments who hold dollars in reserves somewhere, if it's American citizens who have some treasuries as part of their savings, or whatever. But the problem is that sooner or later, if we don't clean up our financial house as a nation, the long-respected idea that full faith and credit of the United States government won't mean anything. And when that actually begins to happen and countries stop buying U.S. treasuries, as Taiwan pulled out a few years ago of $87 billion in one installment, then we're really going to have problems, and then you're going to have high inflation, and it goes from there.
Well, it strikes me, and some people would attribute this to a conspiracy theory. I would simply say the realm of possibility would suggest to me that that the few who understand the financial dynamic of building this burden also understand that the crisis that results from the collapse gives opportunity to those who want to take control over all of the then desperate people.
Well, yeah, I think that's certainly an argument that can be made. But before I go to that, I go back to my point that I think at a more perverse or pervasive level is that, as I mentioned before, that people in the general public just are assuming or believing that, again, deficits and debts don't matter. They again believe that Alan Greenspan can whittle away at his trinket somewhere in Washington, D.C. and come up with these magical powers. We can borrow and we can go into debt and spend and tax and print money and everything so we can have a good time. And it's unfortunate that it seems that people are saying, well, as long as I get mine today, and as long as the U.S. government doesn't default before I die, I really don't care. Well, and that's unfortunate.
It is very unfortunate. And I always, I'm increasingly saying to baby boomers, people my age, that don't bet on it, that we can wave through until the end of our natural lives. But, you know, the issue is much broader than that. I mean, most of us have brought children into this world, and we suspect that that they will have opportunity and reason to bring their own children into the world. And the sustainable development mantra that we must save for the needs of future generations rings very hollow when you realize that what America is about to do, and is in the process of doing, is denying our posterity the liberty that was delivered to us, and even more so the liberty that was delivered to our ancestors, because the decay has been ongoing, but strikes me as something that is quite accelerating here as the 21st century begins.
Well, I don't think it's much of an overstatement when I often say that the Civil War did not end slavery. It didn't, because of the children like your children and future generations. When all of a sudden they are tagged with paying this enormous debt, either directly by taxation, or more indirectly, but nonetheless still real, by hyperinflation, they're slaves to that.
Well,
they had
right.
No say-so on it.
And the problem is that Americans have not gotten a solid foundation in our academic dynamics on the principles and the laws. You know, there are natural laws to economics, and I know that Congressman Paul understands the Austrian School of Economics, Ludwig von Mises, and the Mises Institute, or Mises.org, which is a great place for young people particularly to spend some time, because it's an exciting intellectual endeavor that one can undertake when coming to understand what the real principles of economics and the real consequences of economic law is. As an increasing number of people begin to do that, I think it gives us great hope that over the next decade a rise in an understanding of the economic principles that support liberty is about to happen.
Well, I certainly would encourage your listeners to do exactly what you said. The Mises Institute is a great place to learn, I recommend people go there, and I also suggest that they go to our website, thelibertycommittee.org, and subscribe to our email list so we can give them firsthand information on things that happen in Washington, so they can take that knowledge that they learned from the Mises Institute and other places and apply that and get active in a legislative process, because that's where the laws are made, and that's, you know, we have to live by those laws, good, bad, and different.
Yes, the libertycommittee.org.
That's correct. All three words, libertycommittee.org. And, it's one click and subscribe to your email list, and we'll give you information that you probably won't see or hear anyplace else.
Well, I subscribe to that, and I will heartily recommend it to the listening audience. It's a way to find out what's really going on in Congress and take a role yourself, by knowing just how it is and what it is you can do to help have an impact back in Washington, D.C. Yeah, Kent, as I was going through the website, there's another subject matter that I thought was handled extraordinarily well, and that had to do with Congressman Paul's First Amendment Restoration Act, or so-called, about the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution. What can you tell our audience about the effort to bring the original meaning of the words back into the public domain, respecting constitutional prohibition against the government's establishment of a religion?
Well, I tell you, it's unfortunate, because Congress and even the Supreme Court and certainly the executive over years have totally thwarted the Constitution, ignored it, and thrown it out the window, use whatever phrases you want to, that we have to have these individual bills to try to reestablish and restore the First Amendment, for example, and freedom of speech and freedom of religion, the Second Amendment Restoration Act, which is another bill where it reaffirms the right of Americans to self-defense, the right to carry firearms and that sort of thing. It's unfortunate, but that's what we have to do. And we're in there with these type of bills, as you've mentioned, to try to bring attention to the public that these rights that have been codified by the Constitution, limits of power primary, specifically on Congress, as you know, and the federal government, that they're there. And we're trying to bring those back and refresh them and bring them back. But we have Congress to deal with. We've got the executive, regardless of which political party is in the White House. And unfortunately now we have the courts that are beginning to be a real problem, and they have, whether it's at the U.S. Supreme Court or even the federal district courts or appellate courts. So in a nutshell, what we have is we have the three branches of the government, the executive, legislature, and the judicial, that are really working hand in glove to centralize this power and to take away these natural rights that we had, again, codified in the Constitution, and now we have to go through and try to bring them back to life.
Well, in the context, it's such a hot subject today with all of the attacks on those who experience religion and theology in their lives. You know, the people who banter tolerance in our government school system are particularly intolerant of those who have a faith in the supernatural. And on your website, the article that the press release regarding the First Amendment Restoration Act does a beautiful job, I think, of showing how the concept of separation of church and state is really a wrong notion and is not what the meaning of the Constitution ever intended. And and it's so unfortunate that the American people don't understand the difference. I mean, Congress is not to make a law regarding the establishment of religion. That doesn't mean you can't be religious.
Right, and that is unfortunately obviously what most people think, that separation of church and state means that there should be no religion, essentially, in the United States. And of course, that's absolute nonsense. And it's just the idea of prohibition against a state imposed or sanctioned religion. But unfortunately, some of these things have been warped over time, and people have used them to their ends. And as I often say, D.C. is like living in the Twilight Zone. Up means down, black means white, and over a period of time, words change their meaning. And they mean all of a sudden the exact opposite. But that's the world we live in.
Well, you know, George Washington, at the request of the very Congress which passed the Bill of Rights, proclaimed a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God. So here. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you mentioned earlier that a lot of these people who say, oh, there's a separation of church and state and that's it, of course, what they do is they want to replace, let's say, you know, Christianity or whatever religion you want, I don't care what it is, with the religion of the state. And I argue all the time that these people who promote this are promoting a religious adherence to the state. It might not be to God or gods or this or that or whatever religious or spiritual entity one believes in, but they say, oh, let's have a religious adherence and respect to the state. So, to me, that's their religion.
Well, I'll be tolerant of someone who wants to think that way, but I will not accept having that person use the state religion of controlling human action as something that is at all legitimate, and certainly in the context of the American founding, when one studies the document itself and the meaning of those words as it was intended at the time, the limitation on the scope of government powers becomes very evident, and once one understands why that was the case, one then becomes as I have, and so many others around us have in their middle years come to understand the great glory that is the idea behind the American experiment.
Right, certainly. And I mean, if you believe and have a religion of a spiritual nature, again, of a god or gods or whatever, and you try to, let's say, evangelize and share your religion with other people, you try to do that by inspiration, by testimony, by education, by persuasion, by example, all those sorts of things, that's a wonderful thing. But the people who adhere to the religion of the state, as you just mentioned, they will use the state, which is force, to force you to do X, Y, and Z. And that's a completely different situation.
Well, I know the Liberty Committee is also engaged in a number of issues that deal with the international scope and the international thrust that is being put within the American within American governance. And let's spend some of these last minutes talking about how global governance is making its way into and via the U.S. Congress, and what it is that that the Liberty Committee is doing to abut that.
Well, the benchmark in our movement, of course, is Dr. Paul's very well-known bill, H.R. 1146, which calls for the U.S. to withdraw from the United Nations. And if we could do that, a lot of the global governance movement, in our view, would be slowed down a lot. Subsets of that, of course, in today's press, you have the news about the International Criminal Court, which we've been fighting against from day one. That's just another part of it. So we've got that. Of course, you have the WTO, the World Trade Organization, which we fought against. And two or three years ago, at that time, Dr. Paul was on the House floor and said, I predict that one of these days, the U.S. Congress will be forced to change domestic tax policy to adjust to a ruling, so-called ruling of the World Trade Organization. And that day actually came true about 18 months ago, and now the U.S. Congress has done that, I believe, on four or five occasions. So now you have the U.S. Congress now changing domestic tax policy to satisfy a ruling of some people you'll never know, you'll never meet, somewhere in the world that decide whatever they decide. So you've got the World Trade Organization, and of course it says nothing of the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and all the different subsidiaries of the United Nations, whether it's UNESCO, which is an organization where we're unfortunate President Bush rejoined the U.S. to, and we're trying to get out of that. And the list goes on and on and on. But again, as a general theme, it is this push towards centralized power.
Centralized power on a global basis.
Oh, sure, sure. Because, yeah, I mean, corporations now are becoming more, if you will, having allegiance to a variety of countries because they have operations overseas. I'm a devout capitalist. But the problem sometimes is that these corporations now are pushing towards this global governance because their allegiance is to the corporation and not to the country. So it's all this. And, of course, when certain groups can't get what they want, let's say in the United States, they go elsewhere in other countries and other organizations and then try to get what they want by way of treaty.
Well, and when we talk about corporations and their allegiance, I too am quite a capitalist, and yet it's becoming more clear to me that free trade, there are several notions of free trade bandied about today, and it seems to me that you can't have genuine free trade without a country that defends and protects the ideals of private property. And that's certainly not happening here in the United States, so it seems to me that whatever trade we do is not free trade. And when that trade is becoming increasingly coordinated and dictated by international organizations that are premised on a different set of ideals, we can be in big trouble. We'll be right back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz.
As we look out across America, in the 21st century. Ecological devastation, at least that's what they're telling me. Environmental apocalypse, as sure as the sky is blue. So sustainable development, they're taking aim at me and you. They say your life is not sustainable. Tell me how you feel about that. And your purple mountain's majesty are endangered habitat. You take up too much air and space, so they're relocating you to an eco-friendly biosphere. Your consuming days are through. And advance the cause of freedom in the 21st century.
We're back early for those stations that haven't broken away for their own commercials. We're here with Kent Snyder with the Liberty Committee in Washington, D.C., and we're talking now about global governance and Congress's capitulation to international organizations and how that is affecting government policy. But before we go on, Kent, it strikes me that that what we're really talking about here is the antithetical ideas that, you know, on one hand we've got the concept of unalienable rights, meaning that each of us have a right to our life, our liberty, and our property. And that's that was the idea that the country was founded on with the Declaration of Independence. The opposite of that idea is that we have a primary duty to the community or the collective, and that individual growth and expression is subject to government dictation. And if we looked at the two documents, the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights and compared it with the U.S. Declaration of Independence, we'd find this striking difference.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, Americans need to remind themselves that the United States of America is truly a unique place. It's a unique institution. It's simply unique in so many respects, and part of it is our system of government, the idea of natural rights, the idea of limited government, the idea of a republic, and goes on from there. Most countries of the world, they don't have it. They never had that history. There's always been a history of some sort of dictator, some sort of tyrant, some sort of singular ruler.
Our audience is going to be rejoining us in just a moment. And we're back with Kent Snyder, and we're talking about how unique the American experience is in the context of all political establishments now or at any time in the history of the world, and how it's at great jeopardy as we begin to fall swail to the ideals and our ideas of the United Nations, which basically says that your rights are granted to you by a political elite, and that your freedoms may in no case under the UN Declaration of Human Rights be exercised contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. Now, that's quite a contrast from our Bill of Rights, which says Congress shall make no law, and unfortunately
right.
they are, but
right.
But the ideals are quite a contrast.
Well, as I was saying, that Americans need to remind themselves or in some cases learn for the first time, again, how unique our country and our system of government is, and we need to, once we understand that or refresh ourselves of that, we need to then contrast, as you just did, what the United Nations and there's 189 other countries of the world, most other countries, how they operate and have operated, they're going to glom together and gather as a group, and they're going to, in my opinion, quite frankly, look at the United States as a host of a wealth, a great amount of wealth that they can extract from in a variety of different ways, and whether through any sort of UN organization and whatnot. So, again, Americans need to understand their history and be proud of it, understand their heritage, realize how special our country is, and we need to keep that, and we need to fight for it, because there are people around the world as well as within our own borders that want to take that away from us.
Well, that's what we all need to become much more vigilant about. Kent, we have a caller, Roger from Pennsylvania.
And yes. Roger, are you there?
Yes, thanks, gents. I'd like to ask, is there a more effective way to embarrass or otherwise persuade our ostensibly Republican congressmen to actually get behind Ron Paul's bills? Like in my own case, all too sadly and truthfully, Congressman Pat Toomey is regarded as one of the most conservative in the nation, yet he finds money for the UN and all the things you were talking about.
Right.
All these vital votes, which he goes along with the herd on, and as I pigeonholed him in the morning radio, yeah, they claim to be a member of the Liberty Committee, yet you just can't seem to sponsor any of Ron Paul's bills. Now, why is that? And I cite a specific bill. The only answer I get is, oh, I'll have to look into that, as though it hasn't been sitting there in front of him for 2 years already.
Well, first of all, good for you. Thanks for doing that and being attentive and bringing that to his attention, and keep after it. Don't be quiet. So I applaud your efforts, and I sincerely mean that, because that really does make a difference. Having said that, the fact is that, you know, Ron Paul is a unique person in Congress, and I think most people understand that. And we realize how special and unique he is by his voting record, which is obviously the bottom line to practicing his philosophy. And we're just trying to get other members to be more like him, either in co-sponsorship of bills that he, Dr. Paul, has sponsored, or, of course, in votes. The bottom line answer is keep heckling these people and force them to realize that it is to their political advantage to take our position. And I can give you some examples again where that is happening. So don't give up and keep doing it.
Well, Roger, thank you very much.
I wish it was a better answer, but that's how it works.
Well, I think it's a great answer. What we need to be doing increasingly is bringing to our Congress people wherever we are. It may not do much good here in Santa Cruz. We have the only congressman in the history of the United States to fly the United Nations flag outside his door. That's Congressman Sam Farr. Kent, we're going to end this hour. Are you able to stay on with us for the beginning of our second hour?
For how long?
Oh, 10 minutes or so?
That's fine. Sure, go ahead.
Good. Thank you. We'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show on the Radio Liberty Network. Welcome to the second hour of this evening's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. We spent the first hour with an outstanding discussion straight from Washington, D.C., Mr. Kent Snyder, Executive Director of the Liberty Committee, which coordinates with the Congressional Liberty Caucus, headed up by Congressman Ron Paul. The emerging bastion for the restoration of liberty in America is what I'd characterize the Liberty Caucus as, and Mr. Snyder has been gracious enough to stay with us. It's now midnight in Washington, D.C., where he's on the line to us from, and he's going to be with us for another 10 minutes or so. And Kent, what I'd like to do is, after that, a full discussion. If you didn't hear the first hour, you can tune into it tomorrow on the replay here in Santa Cruz from 4 to 5 p.m., or you can get it on the archives at radioliberty.com. But, Kent, what would you say, that was a good call from Roger at the end of the last hour, what would you say Americans need to do to get themselves focused on the real issues that are before us, not the funny ones that we see on Fox News or CNN, but the real issues that befront the challenges that we face for the 21st century?
Well, I would probably share advice from, of all people, you probably wouldn't guess this, James Carville, the infamous Democratic consultant and Clinton political person, all that sort of thing. And what I mean by that is James Carville had spoke at Georgetown University last year. I attended the standing room only event just to see what he was going to say, and the response from the people in the audience. Again, it was standing room only of probably 300 people. But at the end of Mr. Carville's talk, he said that whether, regardless of what you do in your life, occupation, status in life, whatever it is, you have to understand and accept one fact, and that is politics affects you. Politics affects all of us, whether it is through taxes by the government, whether it's land permits, if it's a parking ticket, if it's zoning this or zoning that, whatever it is, politics affects you whether you like it or not. So even if you don't want to participate, it will affect you. And that is probably the first thing that I would share with people, is to understand that truth, that politics affects them. And once you understand that, then you begin to start noticing things more clearly. Things become more clear to you. You become aware of trends. You become aware of decisions by your local governments, by the federal governments, by the presidents, by the courts, and you start connecting the dots. And it is, for a lot of people, they have to take their own time. But once they do, and once they, again, as a basis, realize that politics affects them, and they begin to be observant and aware, sooner or later, they will connect the dots and see the pictures that we've described in the previous hour beginning to emerge. Once that takes place for that individual, they need to then make a decision, well, this is satisfactory or totally unsatisfactory to me, and I am going to participate because I have every right to do so, and I am going to go from there. And that's why, again, Dr. Paul formed this organization to give people who are at that point the opportunity to get information and the means to participate, and that's why we encourage people to join us.
Well, and as government continues to centralize and gain more and more power and spend more and more money, the truth of what you just said becomes more and more clear. And that's why the work the Liberty Committee does is just so important. And I've got to surmise that once people say, well, okay, I can see that politics is squeezing my option here and squeezing my choice there and constricting my behavior in this regard and in that regard on an unreasonable basis, the next thing they've got to ask themselves is, well, what is it I need to know to give myself a base in understanding the philosophy behind politics? And that's when I say, well, that's when we start to look at the United States Constitution, which is mankind's greatest achievement, is the organization of these ideas that give liberty as a vision and a mission for all who follow its guidelines. We'll be right back. We're back now at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show with Kent Snyder for the last few minutes here. And Kent, any other comments you might have, advice or information you'd like to leave our audience with?
I just ask them and encourage them to, again, get involved. Go to our website, thelibertycommittee.org. Join our email list. Get information from us. We don't give you frivolous or unnecessary information. We try to give you information that you don't get elsewhere, and once you get that information, take advantage of it and participate. And we believe in freedom versus servitude, and as you said in your opening remarks, that really is the both poles of the spectrum, is either more freedom or more servitude, and we simply believe in freedom, and that's what we're working for.
Well, I'm going to look forward to meeting you and shaking your hand and thank you for all the good hard work you've dedicated your life to back in Washington, D.C. when I get to meet with you in Reno next month at the Freedom 21 convention. And I thank you for attending that as well, and look forward to advancing the cause of freedom here.
Well,
in the
21st. Great. Thanks for having me, and thanks for your work.
Well, thank you, Kent. Well, we're going to proceed now with our scheduled second hour, and I'm looking across the table at my co-host for this hour, Mrs. Lisa Rudnick, my longtime and good friend and compatriot in these efforts in our local waters for bringing light to the real dynamic that drives the political machinery here in Santa Cruz. You know, it's one that's been here for three decades, and what we're going to talk about in part tonight is how they really unbutted their rose yesterday at the Board of Supervisors meeting as sustainable development in all its glory came through in one day like it never has before. Now, you didn't read about that in today's Santa Cruz Sentinel, no way, because they're a compliant partner to this mess. But Santa Cruz is being changed. It's being changed from a community where your life is your own into a community where the government is going to run more and more and more of every aspect of our lives. You see, they're engaged in a program called behavior modification, and it affects how we move, how our children are educated, how we lead our lives, how we coordinate our businesses, how we get our health care, and every other aspect. So as we return from our breaks at some stations here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show, we'll begin our conversation on local sustainable development actions here of late. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. We ended our first hour plus the beginning of this second hour with Mr. Kent Snyder of the Liberty Committee in Washington, D.C. The Liberty Committee is the arm of the Congressional Liberty Caucus, headed up by Congressman Ron Paul. And that was a very insightful period. We're going to spend the rest of the bulk of this hour talking about sustainable development, how the feds are influencing Santa Cruz policy, how the local political machinery is living out its long-planned dream of global to local. That's right, global to local, and that's how our politics are being affected right now. It's a global plan. Lisa, my co-host here for this period, and I both sat on the Santa Cruz local United Nations Agenda 21 committees back in the mid-90s. Well, good evening, Lisa, and what do you have to say about that?
Good evening, Michael. Yes, as Michael said, back in the mid-90s, he and I both attended some local Agenda 21 meetings. At the time, we didn't really know what it was. We were just kind of curious more than anything. And it was portrayed to be a process where you could sit at the table with people of opposing views and figure out what you had in common, what you could agree on. Well, after the first meeting, a lot of people who I would, I guess, have to characterize as having some rather radical viewpoints basically said, oh, we can't work with this group. We're out of here. Well, lo and behold, after the rest of us attended meetings for 2 years, the people who had initially exited the meeting came back and inserted everything they wanted in the document that we had come up with over 2 years on one aspect. Agenda 21 has 12 roundtables or 12 areas that they seek to influence. And this one particular roundtable was on ecosystem, biodiversity, forest management. So it was very discouraging, to say the least, after attending meetings regularly and working very hard on a document that I didn't at the time yet see where it was going, to have all this political jargon inserted into it in the 11th hour. And it turned out to be quite the little socialist document. I would encourage people to do searches on Agenda 21. You can find very good information at the Freedom 21 website. But if you look through Agenda 21, you will see that they do seek to control every aspect of your life. And I would encourage people to get familiar with it because it is the blueprint for America. And if you look at it, you will understand why things that are happening are happening, why people are losing their jobs, why people are losing their businesses, their homes, their land, why we are importing resources from all over the world, while we let ours waste and rot and burn. So it was quite an eye-opening experience, this Agenda 21 committee that we sat on. And it was only after a few years that we really saw the ramifications of this. We didn't really believe at the time that this was going to go anywhere. But in 1997, our Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors adopted this. And now we see things from this seemingly ridiculous, it is ridiculous, crazy blueprint being codified into our county ordinances. And obviously we see them at the state level and the federal level as well.
Well, you know, it's the federal monies, as Kent Snyder talked about, that is being distributed out to, that is making these things happen. And here in Santa Cruz, we're going to talk about some of that. But by way of further background, you know, Lisa and I were both involved with the Santa Cruz County Resource Conservation District. Now, that's a fuzzy sounding term, and it used to be an innocuous organization that attempted to give information to landowners that that they may or may not find of assistance in terms of managing their land. And we used to sit on that that board. It's a special district. It's an arm of the federal government on a local level. And it had a budget of about $10,000. There was a part-time secretary, and the rest of us all made our contribution voluntarily. Well, now the Resource Conservation District, we're no longer involved, runs on a budget of millions and millions. In fact, they had a special emergency. The emergency meetings are happening all over this county these days. You know, you get so many meetings to go to at night that 10 people couldn't attend them all if they gave up their family forever. But there was an emergency meeting last month by the Resource Conservation District because they had to allocate $2.2 million of Prop 13 money. That's your property taxes. While the schools are closing and the roads can't be improved because there's no money in the budget, so says this last week's Santa Cruz Sentinel in the headline, on the road to ruin, it says, street repairs postponed by tight city budgets. But at the same time, the Resource Conservation District gave $2.2 million of property tax monies down for some silly water study projects on the farmlands of the Paro District. Now, that's only to compromise the efforts of those farmers further. And a lot of that money goes to the creation of frog ponds along the river. So our money's going to frog ponds in the name of sustainable development in the environmental movement, while schools close, roads don't get paved, all of the kinds of financial pressures are pretended to be happening. But there are some guys, the guys who get to make these frog ponds, I call them overgrown boys, you know, who never learned how to get a real job. They got to get government taxes to go out and do things that always fail. Now, that's the remarkable part, is the sustainable development environmental movement fails. Now, Lisa and I have got backgrounds in natural resource management, and we understand how human action engaged with the landscape is what gives the landscape its diversity, its productivity. And that can be measured from a thousand different ways, or more than that, as many ways as there are imaginations. But once we put into the one-way box of the sustainable development movement, all we've got is a bunch of people eagerly feeding at the trough so they can get some money at the expense of somebody else. But at the first place, this money didn't belong to any of them.
That's right. And they've also been awarded, within the last 6 months, $4.5 million from the Ocean Conservancy. And so when you add those together, that's almost $7 million this year when our schools are closing, as Michael says, and it just makes no sense whatsoever. I'll also point out that the RCD's real mission was supposedly, the way it was set up many decades ago, was the RCD is supposed to be a go-between between the citizens and the federal government. They are supposed to be a liaison. And what we've seen with the local RCD, and I suspect it's going on across the country, is that they are taking directives from the federal government and becoming their
field agent.
Yeah, exactly. And they are being given lots of grant money to do all sorts of things. So now, instead of helping the citizen and being a go-between, they are actually implementing federal mandates and federal ideas unchecked, very little public comment going into these things that they're coming up with. And basically, we have unelected officials here who are now setting land use policy.
Well, you know, and we're seeing that with the regionalization of our government from so many perspectives. I mean, we spent the last few minutes talking about the Resource Conservation District, but then there's the California Water Quality Control Board. The Central Coast Water Quality Control Board was last year headed up by the president of the Soquel Creek Board of Directors. And I'll tell you, we were at a Water Quality Control Board meeting here not long ago where a wonderful man named Dave Smelt was the victim of that board. They had just passed a water data collection fee. That means they have their fellows, all at taxpayer expense, roaming around other people's land, doing water studies. Now, I remember, now people laugh when they first hear this, but if they do a little study, they come to see that it's true. Adolf Hitler was elected, okay, democratically put in power on a campaign promise of protecting the German forests and on animal rights. Now, he had a grand scheme to measure everything in the forest, including all aspects of water quality. Well, back to Dave Smell. Poor Dave had a horrible accident a couple years ago. He was a quadriplegic and now has leukemia. But he needed, in order to move back into his house and make it wheelchair accessible, he needed to harvest some of his trees in the mountains. Well, the Water Quality Control Board assessed a tax that at first they said was going to be 70% of the yield in order that they can worm around his property for the next 5 years and do these water data collection studies.
Right, and they admitted that they weren't even going to use the studies, that the studies were for the landowner. And Dave told him, he says, I know my property. I've lived and worked on that property for 20 years. I don't need your studies that are going to take 70% of my yield. And he had quite a good point.
Well, you know, and continuing to talk about regionalism, of course, you know, the Soviets have always understood that you don't want political boundaries. You want regions to run government by. That way you can have a top-down ordering. But the Association of Bay Area Governments, ironically, something that I think was set up by Ronald Reagan, you know, as much as many of us admire the president, he missed the boat when he was governor on this. He set up these regional systems that now, behind the scenes, unelected folks with an agenda, they just continue to proceed right along. But the director of the Monterey Bay Area Association of Governments, or so-called AMBAG, is a fellow whose name I can't quite pronounce, Nick Papadakis. Now, if you look at the Agenda 21 document, you'll see Lisa's name and my late name as collaborators. But if you get up to the front page and look at the advisory board, well, you know, the regional governance guys are right there on the front page. Nick Papadakis, Executive Director, Association of Monterey Bay Area Governments. So the regional governments and the Sustainable Development Agenda 21 plan are one in the same thing. We're going to take a little break here in a few seconds. You're listening to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show here on the Radio Liberty Network. And our objective is to bring information to people here in Santa Cruz, but also to people around the country, because what's happening here is happening everywhere. We simply have a congressman who's more fitted to pilfering the federal coffers for the advance of the sustainable development movement here in Santa Cruz than yours may be. But let me say, you know, if you've got any interest in the health of your children, fight the sustainable development movement in your town. I'm Michael Shaw. I've been asked, what is abundance ecology? Well, it begins with the idea that an owner's right to determine the use is the very essence of private property. This is well illustrated by George Washington's eloquent statement, "Private property and freedom are inseparable." Abundance ecology rejects the wrongly premised hysteria over endangered species, invasive species, and other political tools that promote state collectivism. Instead, abundance ecology is guided by the simple exercise of reason for the supreme importance of human life, individual liberty, and private property, and the awareness of the great potential associated with innovation that arises in a society where individual liberty is the central organizing principle. As California, the nation, and the world are being redirected by a new central organizing principle that calls for the preservation of nature, both man and nature have begun to experience the appearances of shortages. For example, National and State Endangered Species Act, modeled on United Nations treaties, have brought degradation to the wildlands in the United States, while citizens and society at large are stripped of wealth and immense potential benefits. The effect of the Endangered Species Act and its soon-to-be-birthed offspring, the Invasive Species Act, is to eliminate from America an owner's right to determine the use of his property. While regulatory efforts have failed to serve society or nature, the restoration of freedom will fuel our happiness and resume the American tradition of advancing improvement one step at a time. A wealthy nation takes interest in its ecology. Free people take the action necessary to advance their own interests by creating benefits that extend to others. This includes an improving natural world. The practice of abundance ecology works to release the potential productivity and diversity of a landscape. To achieve this end, an owner must be free to engage in rigorous disturbance and free to pursue a reasoned and creative process of trial and error. This process is suited to the choice of each individual and the uniqueness of each property. The foundation of abundance ecology theory is the knowledge that a direct relationship between man and land is paramount. An improving planet is possible only in a society that respects the ideals of private property, individual liberty, and human life.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. I'm the co-host this evening, Lisa Rudnick, being joined with Michael Shaw. And we've been discussing various aspects, mainly local issues during this second hour. But as I said earlier, I suspect these things are going on across the country. Now, as Michael mentioned earlier, yesterday at our Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors meeting, they touched on just about every aspect that they could of government control of your life one way or the other. The Board of Supervisors touched on both zoning issues for government housing. They voted on government health care programs. They voted on transit programs. They voted on something called UWIC, which is a fire code. It is international in origin. And it ties in directly to the Wildlands Project, which, if people are not familiar with the Wildlands Project, it is one prong of sustainable development. Under sustainable development, we have the Wildlands Project, which seeks to return 50% of the continental United States back to what they term wilderness, which means devoid of human interaction. The second prong is smart growth, where we have government housing. And so yesterday at the Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors, they voted on programs for all of these. And the UWIC, the Urban Wildland Interface Code, again, it's a international code, will bring the Endangered Species Act more and more to the forefront when people are trying to do fire hazard reduction projects. We've recently had some state rules passed that are supposedly going to make it a little easier for a private landowner to do some thinning. However, you still have to abide by the Endangered Species Act. And as for people who were listening last week when I hosted the program, we had Mr. Rick Frost on the program, and he is a policy analyst at New Mexico State University. And I have a letter here from him. He was talking about that they had initiated an investigation and evaluation of the environmental lawsuits in the San Diego area in regard to the claim being made that environmental litigation had nothing to do with the recent fires in Southern California. And his letter states that their research discovered that environmental lawsuits in the area over habitat issues going back to 1996 forced habitat management restrictions covering hundreds of square miles in the region, preventing common sense fire prevention activities. And he further states that their conclusion is that these lawsuits are the reason that the fuel load was allowed to reach the levels that they did and destroy almost 900 square miles of communities and habitats, not to mention the 20 lives taken. So this is why the Endangered Species Act remains dangerous, you know, besides the point that it has driven so many people off their properties. It has bankrupted farmers and timber owners and timber operators. And now we have it working its way into the fire code, where they are going to be out in the future. They will be mapping for endangered species. And if you have even habitat that could possibly support these species, you don't even have to have the species. If you have habitat that could support these species, you're going to be restricted from doing your project. So this is why I'm very concerned about this particular subject that the county approved yesterday, this Urban Wildland Interface Code. It's tied directly to the Wildlands Project because it will drive us off the rural lands, both through restricting management and bankrupting people, but also through the catastrophic wildfires that we're going to continue to experience as long as we have this sort of policy.
It seems to me it's becoming more and more obvious that the Endangered Species Act has very little, if anything, in its application to do with protecting species, protecting the bald eagle or protecting the panda bear. You know, what it has to do with is stealing property.
That's right. And the Endangered Species Act, despite it has listed over 1,200 U.S. species as of December 2003, only 15 have been delisted, and those were mainly because the original data citing them as endangered was inaccurate. So over the years, we have spent millions, probably billions, actually, in the years just from 1998 to the year 2000, the cost to the government for enforcing the Endangered Species Act was $2.4 billion.
Well, that's way understated. I can assure you of that. It is huge monies, and it is huge pain on the American people. And, of course, when the progress program continues and concludes itself, we'll find that all of the American land is owned by the government or its partners. Well, that's the same experience that that all of the tyrannies in the history of the world have experienced, and that's what makes America special. That is that you and I and anybody in this listening audience can strive and achieve the responsibility for taking care of land, and that's what makes America great, and that's being stripped away from us. They use our tax dollars to steal our neighbor's land, and nobody's going to win when that proposition settles out fully. We'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz.
The agenda is set. Santa Cruz County government has determined that your bumper-to-bumper commute on Highway 1 is a good idea. Your car is an environmental hazard, and they have a plan to clean it up. I'll be right back.
You are listening to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio on Radio Liberty.
In September of 1997, the final draft of a very ambitious 100-page document was submitted locally to the leaders of Santa Cruz County government. The Board of Supervisors on the county level and the mayors and their councils on the city level were all presented with and asked to endorse a policy planning guide called Santa Cruz County Local Agenda 21, a sustainable community action plan, our agenda for the 21st century. Unfortunately, for those of us who live here, this plan was endorsed. As a matter of fact, it was not only endorsed, it was adopted, embraced, and is now in a full implementation phase by county planning and government. If you are listening on your car radio, crawling in gridlock over highways 1 and 17, you are experiencing the very real-world application of Agenda 21. Those stop-and-go bottlenecks that you're dealing with every day are intentional. They are designed to socially engineer you away from your car and into alternative modes of transportation. The fact that Santa Cruz County government expects traffic congestion to become so intolerable that within a few short years, their more suitable, non-polluting modes of transportation will be used is now clear and understood by many. Their desired state is written in Santa Cruz County Local Agenda 21. It says,
public subsidies are to be shifted from funding highway construction, road maintenance, policing traffic, and publicly funded parking to developing and promoting transportation alternatives.
One of the many goals in the Agenda 21 chapter on transportation is
increase public awareness about personal and societal transportation choices, including walking, bicycling, rail, and bus use.
How effective are we at shopping and carrying home groceries while pedaling our bicycles, riding a new coastal train, or navigating from one county bus transfer to another? To the average American family of four, good luck. Enough of this nonsense. We need to widen Highway 1, and we need to begin construction now. If we allow the planners to do nothing, the people of Santa Cruz County will suffer, in that more and more time will be spent commuting to and from work, school, and everyday errands. That dividend pays off as less and less time spent with loved ones.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. I'm Michael Shaw, and I'm here with my co-host Lisa Rudnick, and we're going to spend some time, a little more time, talking about yesterday's Board of Supervisors meeting where they adopted the International Fire Code that will further constrain, as it moves along, the ability of rural landowners to take charge of the management of their property. And of course, so many restrictions have been put on the people in the mountains already. Those restrictions are going to spread down to the people in the rural areas as the suburbanites get squeezed from the other side. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But, you know, the conditions for a firestorm in this county are being created by the accumulation of fire fuel, and that has resulted from ordinances that I'll call companion to this new International Fire Code that the board adopted yesterday. And those ordinances include the local timber zoning ordinances, which are now the subject of massively expensive litigation, both for the citizen and for the taxpayer, as through our government, continue to take the property of our mountain people right away from them. And then there's other timbering restrictions, the so-called fishland ordinance that expands the size of the stream halfway up the to the ridge and says that the land now is fish land, and that if there's any, quote, inappropriate development, it'll be decommissioned. So if your house happens to be in fish land, you can expect a knock on the door from a friendly federal official within the next 10 years.
And then there's other land management restrictions like the application of the Endangered Species Act and the prospect for so-called habitat conservation plans that will really tie the hands of those folks and drive them to their own demise. So, you know, we've got the fire problems, but, you know, it's not just the people in the mountains that are in trouble. The people in the cities don't know what the board did to them yesterday, do they?
Nope. And what they did yesterday was they passed an emergency ordinance, some emergency, to change a lot of zoning down, particularly near the rail line, from commercial or whatever it might be to residential.
But they didn't change any specific zone. They gave the planning director a czar-like power, did they not?
Right. He can pick and choose.
In other words, his buddies, let's just assume that he happens to have a friend. I'm not suggesting that he would have a friend, but hypothetically, we now have a man in a position that if his friend happens to own the right piece of property, suddenly that property that may have been bought because it was zoned for nothing is now zoned for massive government housing development. Is that a prospect under the system that was adopted yesterday?
It certainly could be a scenario, absolutely. And with the draft housing element that our county board of supervisors adopted a couple of months back, they actually had a table, an appendix in the back that couldn't be found online. You had to go into the planning department to pick up this appendix. But this appendix was page after page after page of what they called underutilized non-vacant parcels. What it is private property that because most of these, I mean, they're non-vacant, so that means it's your house or your business, and they were put on a chart, their APNs and the address and the owner, and now they are going to be dictated that if they want to do any building, any project on that property, they're going to build a certain number of units. The County Board of Supervisors had just prior to that passed an ordinance that said that you must build up to the number, the maximum that they will allow.
And so, in other words, if I have my house or my business on a parcel of property that might be an entrance to a neighborhood, a good lookout post, and it's now being rezoned to six units, of which four must be controlled by the Santa Cruz Housing Authority as part of the government housing stock.
Right.
If I want to make a modification to my property, I won't be allowed to because I can only do what I've been directed to do, which is convert my property into that use.
To the maximum amount of housing. Now, I know a specific case, a woman who lives up north who has a piece of property that's been in the family for many decades, since the 40s. And since the 70s, they have tried to build a house on this piece of property. It has an ocean view. It's not right on the ocean, but a nice piece of property with an ocean view. The county threw up every roadblock they could over the years with these people trying to build. They still, to this date, have not been able to build anything on this property. They are now on that list, except they're on the list of vacant, underutilized properties, and they're told that they can build six moderate income housing units on that. Nice ocean view.
Well, you know, that's one small example, but what we're talking about are 10,000 government units that are in the new housing plan that will be released. I think what the county has found out is that the Monterey County Sustainable Development General Plan was beaten down, and so what Santa Cruz has done is they've changed their tactics. Of course, they're guided by ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, based in Toronto, Canada, part of the International United Nations Sustainable Development Movement. They have a contract with the city of Santa Cruz and the county of Santa Cruz. It should be interesting to find out who the people who contracted on behalf of us, the taxpayers, with this international entity that seeks to eliminate private property. But that aside, 10,000 units are being scheduled to be put in along the Santa Cruz rail line, and yesterday what we found is they got a head start on the general plan process. They abated all the rules that have applied to every citizen in this county, and they told Mr. Burns again, you know, if you've got some parcels down there, you know, we don't care who owns them. You know, Mr. Burns, who's been sitting in the background for the last 15 years as the redevelopment director. Now, we've not had many redevelopment projects in this county for 15 years, but we've had a guy with a staff of up to 15 people working, in my surmise, to determine the future use of every important parcel, maybe every parcel in this county. And so with that kind of information that he's been working on for the last 15 years and now suddenly comes forward as planning director and has given these czar-like powers, I got to say, my, oh my, what happened to a system of checks and balances?
Right. They have this emergency that they have created. We have a housing shortage because of how onerous they've made it over all these years for anybody to try to do anything. You often pay tens of thousands of dollars and wait several years before you can do anything, before you can hammer the first nail. And it's ridiculous. They've created the housing shortage, and now this is their solution, which is government housing, taxpayer-funded, on private property where people are going to be strong-armed.
Well, you know, that's just the beginning. You know, if you're part of the of the people who are concerned about this silly trolley that's being planned, it's about time you see that the silly trolley has nothing to do with a silly trolley. It has to do with a new transportation system that's going to move people around who are going to live in units where, in many cases, it's beginning to look. This is a bit of a surmise, but I have heard that this has already occurred down in the city of Watsonville, where the residents will be required not to own a car. So the behavior modification is going to be heavy-duty carrots and sticks. And what we're going to see in the single-family neighborhoods of Santa Cruz County is the same political machine that came to the defense of neighborhoods. We're not going to let your neighbor build a house on his property because we just don't want to, and we're going to deem that the protection of neighbors and neighborhoods, and are the same people who now are coming in with buddy deals where nonprofits who usually spend about twice as much to build a building as free enterprise people, nonprofits are going to be vested with the unilateral capacity to take taxpayer monies, $300 million, the Sentinel has reported, has been funded for the first 3,700 of these units along the railroad track. And at the same time yesterday, another event yesterday at the Board of Supervisors, they talked about the Civic Plaza plan down in Watsonville, which will include a transit center. Now, if we're talking about a trolley from Aptos to Capitola, why is it that millions of dollars are now funded and committed for the purpose of building a transit center down in Watsonville?
Right, this isn't just a trolley.
No, this is a commuter line for government dependents that they intend to lure into the county. These will either be government activists who will work as Tom Quinn explained last week, I think, in the context of the Neary Lagoon fiasco. Only now it's not going to be a couple hundred of these units, it's going to be thousands of them. And other people chosen by the government to live there. So we're about to, you know, render ourselves a change, and it's pretty massive. And the pieces come quietly and without much fanfare or notice. The one thing about sustainable development is that there's a payoff for anybody. You know, if you're in the building industry and you're willing to build units that have CC&Rs that say that there'll be an energy master or a water master to control how much water a tenant can use, and you're willing to do that and take your profits guaranteed on the front end, well, there's a place for you. And, you know, and I think that's what we're seeing here in Santa Cruz and around the country.
That's right. And what people need to understand, too, I think it was pointed out most appropriately by one of our very own supervisors. She pointed out, because she's against this rail line acquisition, that the rail line is not in an area where we have transportation problems. The transportation problems are along other corridors, and people who are trying to get from A to B aren't over there along that rail line which hugs the coast. It's more for recreation and tourism. It's not going to solve any transportation problem. So by taking this rail line and thinking that it's going to solve transportation problems, well, that's a pipe dream.
Well, there's a number of pipe dreams going on, and yet it's time to take them seriously, because as we learned from Washington, D.C. in the last hour, the unabated spending that the Congress is undertaking, and spending for programs that lure more and more Americans into dependency. I mean, if you're a collectivist government, what you want to do is three things. You want to create confusion in the minds of the populace so that you can beguile them. And then you want to create division by breaking people into the left and the right, or the religious or the non-religious, or the Democrats or the Republicans, or one nationality versus another. That's what you want to do. And then finally, what you really want to do is make dependents. You know, dependents who have lost their way to leading a life that's their own and are willing to compromise the ability of others to do the same. And I'll tell you, our local politicians have said for a long time they want this to be a fully government town, and they're making some good progress. I know my business here in Santa Cruz has had about 7 calls in the last month or two from the Santa Cruz County Workforce Investment Program. Now, this is another Agenda 21 program that we studied, and it's in the Agenda 21 book if you want to look. The real goal, and I remember our interview with Michael Chapman back in Minnesota, who covers education issues and how the Sustainable Development Education Program has moved across this country into our schools, alienating our children from the values of their parents. But what we find with this workforce education, workforce investment program is what they're doing there is what they did in the land industry about a decade ago, and that is they're taking an inventory. Because from the inventory they gather information. This is very sophisticated strategic management principles. And as they do that, and as they begin to work with the schools to develop little biological resources out of our children to do the jobs that they want them doing, in this new world order, they'll have government housing for them with child care centers at every block, and a transportation system, a slow-moving rail line that takes them out to, oh, who knows, maybe weed the, you know, the mansion for the elite power group. But whatever it is their plan is, you can't always predict the specifics of it. One thing is for certain. The motivation behind Agenda 21 is the centralization of power, right down to the local level, and that's what's happening here in Santa Cruz. They also passed some major move. I didn't get all the details on a health provision here in Santa Cruz, taxpayer funded to pay for, I think, 5,000 uninsured. Now, certainly we're concerned about the good health provisions for everyone and the access to medical care, but as long as you make so many rules about how that medical care gets dispersed and constrict the activities of those people who could provide services for us, we're going to run up the cost, just like we have in housing, just like we are in transportation matters. So it's the intervention that government seems to be stuck on doing that's creating these problems, and then they come in with these emergency ordinances. That means there's no real notice to the people. There's no new process. They waive their secret requirements. They waive all the principles of law that apply to everybody else, so they can sneak in their new little housing utopian plan.
And I would encourage people, when they have to pass this again in 90 days, I'd like to have some people down there showing up, because they have to come back in 90 days and readopt their emergency ordinance.
Well, you know, I think that's going to have to come from ordinary citizens, because, you know, those of us who are watching this closely want to just get that word out. But if you're not part of an organization that, you know, that has taken note that the policies in Santa Cruz seem to be causing consequences that are deleterious to our health and our welfare, and certainly to the liberty of our children and their children, then it's about time we begin to do that. You know, some great news that I read about, actually I've been hearing about, is that Maryland, which was the leader in smart growth, and of course the urban dynamic of sustainable development is smart growth, and Maryland had been way in front of California and everywhere else. And boy, the problems there became so great that they've thrown all the rascals out and have openly rejected all concepts related to smart growth, because they know what it's done is created an elitism on the outside, and in a horrible living condition on the inside of these smart growth cages.
Right. Who really would choose to give up their yard and their property and want to live in government-controlled housing? I mean, all the news that I see these days, the shootings are in the government housing. And I have to laugh when they call it affordable housing, because you were right when you mentioned earlier that it probably costs twice as much to build this housing. And so why people would choose this, and the other thing I think people need to realize, is when you're in government housing, you're going to follow all of their rules, not just not having a car, but everything. I'm sure that people have seen the newscasts where federal housing people have been evicted because of breaking a law. Well, we're going to see more and more of that, and that's how they get more control over every aspect of your life. They will dictate certain things if you're going to live in their housing.
Well, they're not the kind of things that a rational landlord would impose on people.
Right.
It's not going to tell you how much water you can use or whether or not you need a permit to have your grandmother stay over
right.
at your apartment.
It's micromanagement.
Well, it's micromanagement of everything. The farmers are seeing that. The timber guys have been shut down. They're seeing that. And we're going to see more and more of it in every aspect. You know, remember, Agenda 21 is a plan for jobs. It's a plan for health care. It's a plan for...
controlled transportation.
Yes, education, energy, population, which includes the rate of growth, family planning, reproductive rights. It's a whole new system of justice. They call it social justice. Well, our Constitution and our free enterprise system requires a system of equal justice, not a system of social justice where the elite decide how they want to use the law to manage society. And we're seeing more and more of that. And the aspect in the land use element of sustainable development that reflects the social justice policies are called environmental justice. What does that have to do with anything? You know, the interests of a bug are equated to the interests of a human being. And that's what's wrong-headed about this whole thing and why we need to take a look at our policymakers and the policies they're implementing, because time is running short. And it's about time, even though we're still living in the lap of luxury. You know, that luxury system of luxury won't last when there isn't the basic foundation underneath it that supports an improving world. And that's the message we're bringing to you here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show.
After spearheading efforts to implement the United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda in Santa Cruz, California, Congressman Sam Farr wrote,
"I am writing to congratulate you, the Advisory Board, and the Action Santa Cruz County Coalition for completing the local Agenda 21 Action Plan."
Congressman Sam Farr then wrote,
"The local Agenda 21 Action Plan not only has local significance, it also will have regional and national impacts. As you know, the President's Council on Sustainable Development is beginning Phase 3 of its work, with an emphasis on sustainable communities."
Sam Farr continued,
"I have been spearheading a similar effort to develop a process of sustainable development planning for the entire region."
So why does Sam Farr now say he's never heard of United Nations Agenda 21?
Yes, Congressman Farr, I'd like your my name's Daniel Beckett. I'd like your comments on the United Nations Agenda 21 program that you're implementing here. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
But you endorsed it, sir. I have your paperwork.
United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda 21. If there's nothing to hide, why does Sam now deny it? This has been a public service question posed by Freedom 21 Santa Cruz at freedom21santacruz.net, inviting you to advance the cause of freedom in the 21st century. For more information about how you can advance the cause of freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
A conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. constitutional republic.
To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back. You're listening to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. I'm Lisa Rudnick. I'm the co-host this evening with Michael Shaw. And we have about 5 minutes left here in the program. And I'd like to, just for a moment, visit the Endangered Species Act subject once again and just talk about the cost to this, to our government, to our own pockets. According to the Fish and Wildlife Service, they have figures of $610 million that they spent in the years between 98 and 2000 that I mentioned earlier, that when it was investigated by the Pacific Legal Foundation and a group known as Property and Environmental Research Center, it was estimated that the real costs were as much as four times greater than the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was stating, and coming in at more about around $2.4 billion. But then when you add in the private costs, the total exceeds $3.5 billion per year. So people should be concerned about this. If you think it's about saving bugs, it's not. It is gutting our economy. People are losing their jobs, their businesses, their homes, their farms, and even their lives to protect plants, insects, and fish. And I have to say that they're not really protecting those plants, insects, and fish, especially when we're letting the catastrophic wildfires proliferate the way that it's been happening. So what we're moving into is a government that's more committed to so-called endangered species than to its citizens and to the economy upon which we depend.
Well, Lisa, you know, it gets even sillier than that. In my own experience in managing land, you know, we've taken a weed lot of pasture grass and poison oak and have disturbed and beaten that thing to smithereens over the last 18 years. And as a consequence, we have over 200 indigenous species of plants, including three or four that are so unusual that the feds haven't even found them yet and put them on their endangered list. So, you know, the reality is that nature wants to be managed by man, not by bureaucrats who don't have creative ideas, but by any man with a creativity to live out in imagination. And that's what can happen if it has happened to the American experience when we rely on a system of private property, and that's just been corrupted here for the last number of decades, and the rejuvenation of it will just give this country and the world that follows us a tremendous boost and in the glory of life for our succeeding generations. And that's why it's so important that each of us begin to understand what's at risk, understand what the potential is, and decide what it is we can do to help advance the principles of liberty in the 21st century.
That's right. And probably the first thing that people need to begin with is know the Constitution, become reacquainted with the principles of our democratic republic, and secondly, respect the dignity of human life. That's what I see absent in what's going on these days, respecting the rights of others to the use and enjoyment of their property, even if it's not advancing your personal interests. There are laws, that nuisance laws, that you can't nuisance your neighbor. If you're not nuisancing your neighbor, you have the right to the enjoyment and the economic benefits from your property. And that's certainly been eliminated for the most part here in Santa Cruz County. It's certainly on its way out.
Well, you know, we've got just a few seconds left, and what I'd suggest to the person in our audience that is just being acquainted to these issues, that they begin and go in and subscribe to the advancedbulletin.net, and that they look at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz website, and from there we'll take you to a lot of other places, and you'll begin to understand that your property is yours and that your children are yours, and you'll begin to understand more fully how the organized threat seeks to take our property and our parenthood away from us, as the Sustainable Development Global to Local program seeks to collectivize our property, our action, our lives. And this is what we can all stand up and take a position against, while we take a position for the dignity of each of us. Thank you for joining us tonight. We look forward to you next week at this time.